Decision makers have gotten incredibly fast at making the snap decisions when it comes to their time and if something's worthy of them investing that time. For example, you cold call a decision maker, most of them, within the first few seconds of that call, have made a decision as to whether or not they're going to give you a few more seconds. So the million-dollar question becomes, how can we possibly demonstrate immediate value on a cold call? In this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 50,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready, because school is now in session. This week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our upcoming webinar on September 2nd. And it's a little something-something we like to call 10 ways to open a cold call with impact and 5 that absolutely suck. You can learn all about it by visiting yoursalesplaybook.com/coldcall21. We're going to talk a little bit more about it at the end of the podcast as well. So here's the deal when it comes to any time that we're trying to get a decision maker's attention. They're going to make a really, really quick decision as to whether or not that interruption or that request is worthy of their time. So now let's take this a little bit further and let's look at something that happens several times a day for them. And that would be, I mean, certainly we can make an argument for all the emails they must get from sales reps, right? They get a ton of them. But they also still, they get a lot of cold calls. So when you get a lot of something that interrupts you and that takes up your time and that could potentially take up even more, you get incredibly fast at making that decision. Hey, is this worth my time or not? So if we agree with that statement, then we also have to agree that when it comes to cold calls, the first few seconds of that cold call, in other words, how we lead that call, the opening statement of that cold call, can absolutely determine our fate. So let's talk about a few things that we can do in the first few seconds to demonstrate immediate value. And what I mean by value here, hey, is this worth my time in hearing this person out? And the ultimate value we're gonna demonstrate in that call is if it's going to be worth it for them to actually get on a demo with us or get on a discovery call or meet with us face-to-face. But for right now, we're going to be talking baby steps. The first few seconds of the cold call, establishing immediate value. I mean within the first few seconds. How the heck do we do that? Well, the first thing that we're going to talk about is really something not to do. And it's a huge mistake that a lot of people make, not just in their cold calls, but they make this mistake in their cold emails as well, and in most of their prospecting emails in general. And the mistake is this. Most sales reps, and again, I want to just make sure that I just keep driving home the context because I keep going all over the place. So yeah, and they're in their emails and everything else. But right now, I want to focus on your cold calls. Most sales reps lead a cold call with an information dump about their company and their solution. In fact, really, we could put this under the heading of they lead with a pitch, talking at the other person and talking about their widget, their solution, their company, all the bells and whistles and how cool their whole solution is. Now, I want to tell you that, I mean, I used to do it this way. That was kind of how I was taught. I would say that 99% of my coaching clients when I first meet them, 99% of the corporate training clients that I have, when people ask me to come in, do a keynote speech, and we're talking about their sales reps, what they're doing, what they're not doing, where they need improvement. This area right here, I can tell you, most of the people I encounter are guilty of beginning their communication focused on their solution and their own company and how great they are in the pitch, instead of the best, most relevant subject in the world, and that's the person at the other end of that phone. Now, you could easily confuse that for, okay, that means what Paul's saying here is that, you know, you should be super nice and develop rapport and all that. Well, it certainly doesn't hurt, but if you think that beginning a cold call with all the pleasantries is going to be enough, I think that's another mistake, to be honest with you. You know, when I used to think that this was a quote-unquote New York thing, which, if you haven't picked up from my accent, right, big shock, I'm from New York. And I used to think, you know what? My philosophy about starting off a call with the typical, you know, hey, Jane, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. How are you? I used to think that, oh, there you go. There's that antisocial New York thing coming out front and center. Or I used to think, ah, that's just me being a dick, right? I'm not a fan of that. I'm really not. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you go the opposite way and you're rude or whatever. But I'm really not a fan of that for a lot of reasons with the whole hi, how are you thing. First of all, you need to understand you interrupted somebody when they were doing something else. Most people, when they were doing something that was, you know, fairly important, you know, like their job, they really don't want to sit around and, oh, I'm fine, how are you? When really at the end of the day, forgive me, I know this is going to be harsh, but at the end of the day, you guys don't know each other well enough to give a shit how the other person is doing. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I know it sounds cold, but you really don't. It's kind of an empty gesture. But even if you both truly care how the other one's doing at this point, wasting the first few critical seconds of a cold call on how are you, to me, is not enough to buy the next few seconds. I would also go as far as to say that it triggers many times a conditioned response. What happens when we begin a cold call with, hi, how are you, right? Introducing ourselves, hi, and then, hi, how are you? The thing of it is that they've been trained over time to say, oh, wow, this is somebody trying to sell me something. Seriously, I mean, and let's all be real honest and have a group therapy session here. We do the same thing when we're on the receiving end. You know, I get calls, people trying to sell me something. Now, granted, I own a business, so that's going to happen. But I get personal calls, you know, that not personal call, you know, people calling me personally, trying to sell me insurance or financial services or shit for my home or whatever it is. You guys go through it too. And when you hear that, hi, how are you? Immediately, you start thinking, okay, put my guard up. Somebody's about to sell me something. So the very first two things here on the list of kind of things to do are things not to do. I'm not telling you that you should be rude when you get somebody on the phone. I'm just saying you got a few seconds, and it's those first few seconds that are going to determine if you get the next few seconds. It'll be those few seconds that determine if you get the next few seconds after that. I'm just saying that there are more valuable things that you can open a cold call with than, hi, how are you? And I'm going to tell you what they are in a second, by the way. The second mistake that we want to avoid is leading or having that opening statement focused on our company and our widget. Now, let me give you an example of that. A lot of people will open up a cold call something like, "Hi, Mary, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. We're a full-service training company," and blah, 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 and sales pitch, right? It's just kind of immediately, I'm talking at you. And it's just not a good look. It's also very typical, and I also believe it's almost like the "Hi, how are you" thing. I believe it forces the guard up. Oh, okay, so you're selling me something. I got to be careful. Right? Or, you know, "You're selling me something. I don't know what the hell you're selling me. I just know you're selling me something. And I know that I've got other shit to do and I need to get you off my phone." So I really believe that how we open that call can not only determine the next few seconds, but it can also trigger an objection. And in many cases, the objection is kind of a throwaway objection. Just, it's not that I don't believe that they're lying. I just believe that they have their conditioned response to get you off their phone, kind of an auto-eject, if you will. And that's why we hear a lot of the time people will say things like, "We're all set," right? Not interested is like the ultimate, right? So I believe that objections really happen a lot earlier in the conversation. So those are the first two things I want you to think about, but I haven't told you how you can begin with value. So there are really just two things that I'm going to have you focus on for now. One of them you've heard me mention a million times. And what you should do, right, one way that you can open your call to get establish that immediate value is to open up referencing a trigger event. And in order to be able to do that, ready, here comes the big duh Castain moment, right? Is you have to take the time to do a little bit of basic research. I see a lot of mistakes when it comes to research. I have those who don't believe in it, that it's just not pick up the phone, there's no time for that. And I just think that is ridiculous. I think it's also disrespectful to the person at the other end of the phone. And what and the example I've given many times, I want you to think about something, and I guarantee you this is a scenario you've been in. I want you to think about a time when you were hanging out with your family, your friends, or whatever. Maybe it was your coworkers, and some kind of random conversation is going on about some actor or actress. Oh, what was the name of that actress again that was in that movie, you know, Superbad or whatever? Next thing you know, it's almost like we're having a quick draw contest. Phones are out. People are looking it up because everybody wants to be the Google hero, to be the one. Oh, it's this actor. It's, you know, whoever. And that happens all the time. It happens with music. Where, well, what was the name of that band in the 80s again that had Vince Neil as the lead singer or whatever? Phones are out. Everybody's scrambling. So we'll do this on irrelevant shit like bands from the 80s. Dopey shit. But on important things like, oh, I don't know, a call that could land a nice fat commission check in your pocket, suddenly now it's too much of a pain in the ass to do. I've never gotten that. Seriously, I've never have. Now, you also have people that think, you know, again, well, Paul, okay, I get it. It's important, but who the hell has time for it? Well, I think you need to make the time for it. And what I've always talked about when it comes to research, at this point of the game, when we don't even have an appointment set, it makes zero sense to me, unless you're chasing a whale of an account, to spend a ton of time on that account. Because otherwise, if you think of all the accounts that you're trying to at least get the first base with, if you're spending all this time researching them, you're going to become more of a research analyst than you are a salesperson. And there's no money in that side of the game for you. So what I recommend that you do, and I've stolen this concept, is a gentleman by the name of Steve Richard coined the phrase the 3x3 approach to research. The 3x3 approach. What you do is set the timer on your phone for 3 minutes. Give yourself 3 minutes of research. And your objective in that time is to spend 3 minutes and or find three things that you might be able to use. And if you really think about it, if you're doing this all the time, several times a day, you're going to get real quick at it, because you're going to get real quick at running over to Google, running over to LinkedIn. Perhaps there's another website, too, by the way, that you should be going to check their financials by the name of SeekingAlpha.com. If it's a publicly traded company, you could go there. You could set up an alert while you're over at Google. You could set up an alert so that next time around, it'll actually be even easier for you, because now once you start setting up these alerts, you could have the information coming to you instead of you always having to chase after it. So that's what I would recommend that you do, the 3x3 approach. So it starts with that, and you're going to look for trigger events. So trigger events, in case you haven't heard the other 90,000 times I've mentioned it, because I really do go over the top with talking about trigger events. But a trigger event is something that's going on in your prospect's world that, you know, that could dramatically increase the probability of them needing what you sell. Now, one of the things that sold me on the concept of trigger events, I remember it had to be about a decade ago, or damn close, maybe it was 8 or 9 years ago, but I think it was about 10 years ago. I came across this gentleman on the interwebs by the name of Brian Carroll, and he was talking about the viability of these trigger events. And he was saying that an opportunity generated from a trigger event has a 400% higher probability of closing than just some other, you know, lead source that we had. So I want you to think about that. These trigger events actually have a 400% higher probability of closing than something else. So again, we say that a trigger event is something that's going on in their world that could lead to a higher probability of them needing your product or service. So just very quickly, let's step away from sales. I always use the, you know, the crazy example, because, by the way, just a little learning technique for you is, many times if you want somebody to really grasp something, if you create a really vivid story or a vivid picture, It helps them retain it a lot better. So I want you guys to think about, you know, me right here, this crazy idiot, Paul, who has the podcast. And let's pretend I'm not in this whole sales training racket. Me, I'm, you know, I have a little company called Uncle Paul's Towing Company. Now, one thing I could do is I could just start randomly calling people, right? And let's just say my towing company, I do like roadside service type of deal. I could call up people, hey, you know, and tell them all about my service and say, you know, is this something that maybe I could help you with? Is your car on the side of the road today? Now, that would take me a long time to have statistics work in my favor. I just have, oh my gosh, what do you have, the car bugged? I can't believe it, I'm stranded. I got smoke gushing out of the effing car. Get over here, Uncle Paul, right? Be a true uncle and get your ass over here and help me, right? That's one way that I could do it. Or what if I were driving along on, out here in New York, we have something called the expressway. Let's say, for all you non-New Yorkers, I'm going along on the highway, and I happen to see you there on the side of the road. Your hood is up, smoke is gushing out of the car, and there you are, and you have that certain look. And you know what the look is? That I'm pissed off because my car is broken down, and I'm stranded here. I go pulling up my Uncle Paul's towing ride, because I'm badass like that. I'm kind of leaning to the side like a gangster, even though I'm 56 years old and fat. I'm trying to act like I'm cool. I pull up. I roll down the window. And I say, yo, because that's how we do it in New York. I go, yo. Now, I don't say that, but I just say, hey, can I, you know, you need a hand. And you're going to probably say, yeah, genius, you think? What do you think? I'm sitting here for shits and giggles. I need some help here. But it's a goofy example that I gave you, but who do you think would have the higher probability of needing those services? The person that was randomly called and doesn't have a need for a repair at that moment, or the person stranded? That is a trigger event. So now that we have that silliness out of the way, let me give you some examples of trigger events. A lot of the time, if you see PR news releases, that could be a trigger event. A company that's relocating, product launches. Companies now, we're starting to see a lot of companies now that a lot of the restrictions with COVID have been lifted in the U.S. You're seeing companies announcing events. Things like that could be a huge trigger event, if you will. Companies that are hiring. Companies that have received, believe it or not, both good and bad, but particularly bad online reviews like Yelp and why did I just draw a blank, like the Google reviews and all that kind of stuff. But I had another one, damn it, and I forgot what the hell it was. But anyway, companies' earnings, both good and bad. Another one that's huge, and there's a lot of trigger events. Any kind of competitive, you know, things that are going on with their competitors. And I want to just stop there for a second. We forget many times that the people at the C-level are incredibly competitive people. So, you know, in fact, many times this is how they've ascended in the organization, by outworking other people and just having that competitive drive. So never underestimate the power of something going on in their industry or with their competitors, or something that you could then approach them with that would be the equivalent of them having to keep up with the proverbial Joneses, okay? So I want you to keep that in mind, because that's a huge trigger event for them. Things, again, like I said before, that are going on in their industry. Changes in legislation. Now, I have a freebie for you if you want it. I actually have a complete list of over 30 trigger events that you should be on the lookout for when you do your research. If you'd like it, no strings attached, all you have to do is send me an email, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. But I am going to ask for one thing. Now you think, all right, here it comes, he wants money or something like that. Nope, not at all. I ask, seriously, because this is a pet peeve of mine, when people just like do the equivalent of like grunting at you and can't be bothered with actually, you know, typing an email and saying, hey, you know, like actually greeting you and asking you for the thing that you offered. One thing that I can promise you, you will not get a response from me on, is if you send me one of those lazy ass emails where you just like put something in the subject line that says, you know, trigger events PDF, and then nothing in there. I'm going to tell you right now, you're not getting shit if you do that. Seriously, I have to have some kind of a minimum requirement here, because we're trying to get better at what we do, and communication is part of that equation. So if you'd like it, I want you to email me, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. So again, the very first thing that we're going to be on the lookout for, in order to lead with value, right, in order to demonstrate immediate value, is to find a trigger event. So now, why in the heck would this be the equivalent of or help you to demonstrate value? Because first of all, if it's a true trigger event, it's something that if they're a decision maker, they've been talking about in their company. For example, if the company's relocating, it's something they're talking about. They're not just, you know, just waiting till the night before to say, oh yeah, that's right, everybody, let's start talking about this. We got 2 hours to pack up our boxes and get the F out of here. No, they're talking about it all along. Many times, the people you're calling, if they're on the executive board, if they're C-level, they've been involved in decisions around that trigger event. They've been involved in the planning committee for whatever it is, or they might be the exact person that trigger event is centered around. Like, what do I mean by that? Well, if you have somebody new in a role with a company, that actually is a trigger event. New people in a company, and especially new decision makers, you should love them. Most of them are full of what they call, I think experts refer to it as piss and vinegar. They're ready to conquer the world. Many of them have magical powers that other people don't have. What do I mean by that? And I'm being a wise ass. Is the company gives them a lot of things in the beginning, you know, as far as, you know, like grace periods and, you know, more budget. They haven't been there long enough for people to really show their true colors and what tightwads they are with the budgets and everything. So a lot of the time, if you can get the ear of somebody that's new in a company, that could be huge. So that could certainly be a trigger event. So the other thing too, that a lot of people don't realize, that when you immediately lead with a trigger event, not only is it something more interesting than, hi, how are you? Or, you know, I'm Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. We're a full service blah, 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 and pitch them. You have to realize something. You have demonstrated immediately that you thought enough of them to do your research. I really want you to think about that, because that's kind of an important statement there. You can't possibly expect someone to hear you out if you've demonstrated to them that you couldn't take even a minute or two to just do some basic homework on who they are, where they, you know, like what space they're in and things like that. It would blow your mind if I told you the dopey shit that people have said to me in the first few seconds of a cold call, and, you know, even on email, and even over on LinkedIn, to the point of, hey, you know, hey, and they think they're making conversation. What is it you do? Are you kidding me? You can take 2 seconds to look at my profile to see what I do? I mean, seriously, that is like a 2-second thing. And to add insult to injury, it's at the top of the profile. It says, you know, what you do, job description, company, all that kind of shit. So it just kind of amazes me. So the first thing is leading with a trigger event. The way that I lead with a trigger event, just to let you know, and there's a lot of different openers that I'm going to be teaching in the webinar that's going to be coming up on September 2nd. One of the things that I always teach is to kind of start off with, I'll give you an example. Say I'm calling Sue. Hey, Sue, it's Paul Castain calling. Quick question. Then I use the next phrase. So the 2 phrases I want you guys to know before I put this all together is, quick question, I noticed that. Write this down, seriously, unless you're driving in the car, and that would be kind of stupid. I want you to write down, quick question, I noticed that. Hey, Sue, it's Paul Castain calling. Quick question. I noticed that. And then I fill in the blank with what I noticed. Now, what I notice is going to be the trigger event. Hey, Sue, Paul Castain calling. Quick question. I noticed that. You guys have a new product that's going to be launching in November. Then at the tail end of that, I ask an immediate question to get them engaged. I want you to think about how quickly I just took control of that call, and I showed value in it, or I demonstrated value immediately by referencing something that they're dealing with right now. They've got a product launch, and if this is the person that's involved in it, believe me, they're talking about this several times a day. So I'm immediately showing them, hey, I've kind of earned my right to take up your time because I've done my homework. I'm not some schmuck calling off a list of 500 random names and I'm giving you some generic pitch here. I'm leading with something that is relevant to them instead of the traditional me pitching them about me and my company and my widget and how awesome we are. We've got to put that to rest. Though that style has to be put out to pasture. It is past its prime. We have to lead with value. And if you follow that structure that I just gave you, you're really going to be doing some interesting things, believe it or not, because you're doing a pattern interrupt. A pattern interrupt is something that's off script and actually forces the recipient off script because they're used to a certain trajectory where we're calling up, we're asking how they are. Well, we're not doing that here. They're used to immediately somebody launching into a pitch. that triggers a conditioned response from them, which is usually we're all set, we're not interested, send me your information, some kind of a, you know, auto eject like we were talking about. So we've bypassed all that. We're demonstrating value by showing them, hey, I've done my research. Hey, I'm talking about something that you actually give a shit about. And now we've gained immediate control, because not only have we done all that in the first, I don't know, about 8 seconds, I guess, if we timed it, now we've done the ultimate move to gain control of the call. We've asked a question, because you need to end that with an actual question, especially since you started the call by saying quick question. So one thing that I want you to write down, and I want you to realize this as you go through your day-to-day, especially this week, I want you to think about this. I want you to understand that in any dialogue, the person asking the questions is controlling the dialogue. So if you come right out of the gate and before somebody could hit you with an objection, you fire out a question, now they're in response mode rather than, you know, more of an aggressive, let me get you the hell off my phone mode. You're going to see just in that a dramatic improvement in people at least hearing you out. And that's the first step, because most of us believe, I know I do, that I have a much higher probability of advancing you to the next step if you'll simply hear me out. So I have one other thing that I want to throw at you in terms of how you can demonstrate immediate value on a cold call, and it's to lead with a hot topic. And what I mean by that is, again, something of value to them. So the first thing that I taught you was, well, lead with a trigger event, right? Things that are going on in their world that lead to a higher probability of them needing your solution. Well, now I'm saying, okay, maybe you can't find that. Because that happens a lot. People say, Paul, what happens if you truly can't find a trigger event? Well, you know what? Lead then with a hot topic. The way that you can find hot topics, and again, you're going to want to jot these down, because I have a couple of resources for you to check out or places to go. I want you to think about things like trade associations and industry groups that your dream client belongs to. I want you to go to the websites, and I want you to take a look at what they're talking about on those websites. What do I mean by talking about? Well, a lot of these websites have forums where people are posting topics and people are commenting and stuff, a lot like LinkedIn groups. What are they talking about in those forums? What are they talking about at the meetings? Many times on those websites, they'll be talking about upcoming meetings, and it doesn't matter if it's face-to-face or virtual. They have topics. You know, we have Paul Castain coming in to talk about blah, blah, blah. What are the topics? What are the topics of the articles that are written on that website? Their blog posts. If they have any social media, and if they're hovering around certain topics, you get the benefit of their research, because their marketing team, they know that they have to talk about topics that are of interest to the people that belong to those groups. So therefore, you have somebody who has done the work for you. So now, whatever you see them harping on is probably the things that they know their audience wants to hear and is valuable to them. So that could be one of the things that you can do. The other thing that you could do is you can go to the same with like your local chamber of commerce. And if these are like local companies that you're trying to go after, like for example, out here in New York, we have the Long Island Association. You could go to that website. You could do the same thing that we talked about before. What are the topics that they're talking about? Is there a forum there? Their meeting topics, the speakers that are coming in, what are they talking about? Maybe workshops that they're offering. What are the things that they're centering around? They're not just putting up random workshops. They're doing it based on probably polls, research that they've done that they know is of interest. What, again, the blog posts, the social media, the topics, what are the hot topics that you see going on? And again, if they have a forum, what are the topics that you see? Oh, wow, a lot of people are really chiming in on this. That is a hot topic when you see that happen. So do things like that. Certainly, you can go to LinkedIn groups and you can see what they're talking about. And I don't mean just random groups. Like, for example, one of the industries that I serve is the printing industry. So I could go over to one of the groups over there, printing sales professionals, see what they're talking about. I can go over to the PSDA group, see what they're talking about. What are the hot topics? It is not foolproof because a lot of those groups have really taken a nosedive. But that's another place. But you know, one place that a lot of people miss that I've actually seen some good results, a lot of the Facebook groups, because I've seen a lot of people get kind of fed up on the LinkedIn side and they're going over to the Facebook group. So again, look up the groups that serve the people that would represent your dream clients. Go over there, look at those topics that people are talking about. What are the topics that people just seem to be very interested in right now? Now, we're not doing this necessarily. So, okay, now write content around it. You're doing it because now you might be able to lead with a hot topic, something that you've seen. And you could also talk to other salespeople on your team and ask them, hey, when you go to a meeting with a potential customer, what are some of the topics that they really seem to want to talk about? What are the questions that they're asking you? Go to your marketing team, and ask them, hey, you know, if you're getting people filling out, like, you know, they're inquiring about our services, what are some of the questions? Look in your own inbox. What are some of the questions that people tend to, you know, are asking me right now? And I would do that. And then you could take all that information and you could certainly lead with something more value. So I'm going to wind down with this note. See, once you get their attention in the first few seconds by offering something relevant and of value, like talking about a trigger event, talking about one of these hot topics that we've determined, and, you know, again, kind of demonstrating that you've done your homework, then what you can do is you've bought yourself enough time now to kind of tie in what you do and how you can help them with that hot topic, or how you could help them through that trigger event. That's how you can dramatically change the trajectory of your calls. So before you go, I just want to remind you that on September 2nd, which is a Thursday, we're going to be talking about really how you can open up your cold calls more effectively. In fact, the name of the webinar is called 10 Ways to Open a Cold Call with Impact and 5 That Absolutely Suck. We're going to be talking about 10 cold call openers that get a decision maker's attention without being cheesy, right? I mean, we think we're being cute sometimes, but they've been there and done that, and it really is a nice way to trigger them getting you the hell off their phone. We're going to talk about how to master the art of the pattern interrupt. Today, I covered one type of pattern interrupt when we did that whole quick question thing, but there are several others that I want you to own and be able to use and change the trajectory of your cold calls. We're also going to be talking about how to dramatically reduce the probability of a phone objection. I'm here to tell you that most phone training fails. And the reason why it fails is because when it comes to phone objections, they focus too much on how you respond to an objection instead of, or at least in addition to, teaching you how to avoid getting one in the first place. And we're certainly going to do that. Last but not least, I'm going to lay out 5 phrases that are actually quite popular, and you might think that copying them and using them would be to your advantage, but I'm here to tell you that there are five phrases that you have to avoid at all costs. If you'd like to learn more and to reserve your spot, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/coldcall21. All lowercase letters, all one word, yoursalesplaybook.com/coldcall21. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.